තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස Good morning everyone. So we'll go into the lecture. Last time we discussed about, and I also think to mention, I have almost finished the handout because I was quite busy last week, and it's almost to close to the completion. So I'll be able to share it in our website very soon. Sorry for the delay. So all the handouts for the entire 20 weeks will be soonly distributed. I couldn't finalize it, so due to my busy schedule. So today last week we discussed about the consciousness. We gave a brief introduction to it. According to Buddhism, Theravada Buddhism, consciousness and matter are two different elements, but they interdepend. They depend on each other mutually, and the main characteristic or function of the consciousness was to have the focus. We discussed on this. We call it the cognition. In the sphere of cognition, consciousness plays the main role, and it is associated with certain mental factors which we call chetasikas. So in this act of knowing an object, in this act of cognizing an object, actually it's a collective thing, it's a collective function is happening. Like consciousness and mental factors comes together, arise together, and they cognize a certain object, and then we do the activities, the mental activities. Sometimes we call it the awareness, sometimes we call it like attachment, sometimes we call that someone is depressed, someone hates another person. So likewise, we may use different different wordings for these mental activities. We can call it the called as a psychology, the psychic sphere of a living being, psychic sphere of a living being. So in this realm, the psychic realm, psychic doesn't mean that it's something transcendental or it's something spiritual. Here psychic means the cognition of a certain being, cognition done by a certain being. So this is a collective act. This is a collective act. It means now the focus itself cannot happen alone. The focus itself cannot happen alone. It has to be associated with certain mental factors. They are necessary requirements. Therefore, we have to say that there is a minimum level of cognition according to the Buddhist teachings. Minimal level of cognition. What does it mean? The focus alone cannot happen, for instance, without the feeling. It means when the cognition is happening, when we know a certain object, there is a must that a certain mental facet or aspect of this cognition becomes sensitive to the flavor of the object. If I say it in different words, object is always known together with its flavor. An object is always known together with its flavor. So likewise, there are minimum requirements for this act to come into completion. Otherwise, the act of cognition is not possible. So that's why we call it a collective function. It's a collective function. So in this function, the basic mental act is the consciousness. Because it is the focus which facilitates the other functioning of sub-mental acts I would call them submental acts, the chetasikas, or sometimes we can call the other mental acts. So other than the focus, there are certain mental activities mean mental emotions sometimes, that function at that same moment together with the focus. But focus is the forerunner. Focus acts as the surface or as the main reason, main component of this act of cognition. And that we called, that we termed as consciousness. So before going into consciousness, I decided to take a different approach in explaining the consciousness, rather than going in the traditional way of explaining the number of consciousness and consciousnesses. I would use a plural word which is not normally used in English, but venerable Bhikkhu Bodhi also have used this, adapted this plural form, consciousnesses, something like that. I know it's not proper English, but it's a terminology that we can adapt to in our Buddhist teachings. Consciousness refers to one act of knowing an object. The plural consciousnesses means the many cittas that occur. Because according to Buddhism, it's not just one consciousness which cognizes all the objects that we encounter in one life. Consciousness is, it rapidly changes. A consciousness appears, passes away. Another consciousness appears, passes away. It's happening as in a generation. So rather than going into explain the consciousness in detail one after another, which I also did in my Sinhala fundamental class, I would take a different approach. First, discussing about the mental factors, because mental factors, consciousness itself is the mere focus of towards an object. Focusing an object is the consciousness. So, and also we mentioned that there are various flavors of this consciousness. There are various verifications, like verities of this consciousness. So why they are various or why they are different from each other? According to that diversity, we have 89 types of consciousness, according to the diversity. But consciousness itself has the characteristic of focus, but based on different criteria or different ingredients it associates, or different functions it performs, or different bases it associates. So based on different aspects, we classify the consciousness, or we explain consciousness in 89 fold. So as 89 fold. Or sometimes we explain it as 121 consciousness. So one of the major reasons for this diversity in the realm of consciousness is its associations. Consciousness always associates mental factors. It always associates mental factors, which we call the chetasikas. So if we know, have a basic knowledge about these chetasikas, that would facilitate the easy grabbing or understanding about the consciousness. The Pali terms that we used for these mental elements, consciousness was called the citta. Citta, then mental factors were called chetasika. They were called chetasika. So rather than starting from the consciousness, I would start from mental factors. So these mental factors that are associating the consciousness, I'll remind again, consciousness can never happen alone. It is always associated with certain mental factors. We have 52 types of mental factors according to the Theravada tradition. 52 types of mental factors. In different traditions like the some like Sarvastivadins and so forth, they would classify the mental factors in a different classification method. So there are like the sati, according to them, sati is something, a universal mental factor that associates each and every consciousness, because consciousness has the ability to recall something. So likewise, then the wholesome sati is called appamada. But in the Theravadians, the classification happens differently. Recalling something in the past has to be explained in a process, not as a one single mental factor. So likewise, the approaches are different. Then someone can ask a question, is it highly necessary, is it utterly necessary that we know the exact number of mental factors as they are, or if we have certain misunderstandings about the numbers, does it affect our practice? To my personal understanding, it's like a cake. There is a certain cake which represent the mental factors of our mind, the emotions or the particulars, mental particulars that arise together with consciousness. So if we take it as a cake, we may cut it in a different shape. One may cut it in a rather different shape. So, but in the end, we get the essence is the cake. How we cut it doesn't matter in the end. So likewise, if someone has the idea about mental factors, and if someone knows that these mental factors are conditioned and they are impermanent, they are suffering and so forth, so as long as we have that general idea about these mental factors, the understanding can appear in Vipassana meditation. So that's why in sutras we don't find all the 52 in any one sutta, in a single sutta, all these 52 mental factors, some are missing. So does it affect our practice? To my understanding, no. It doesn't affect the practice much. But if you have a holistic understanding about what they are, how many mental factors, chetasikas, are counted in the Theravada tradition, it will be very useful for us to have a deeper understanding and also to lead our practice with much comprehension or comprehensive manner. We'd be able to look into the subject in a more broader scale. So that's why it is necessary. Sometimes we get to know that the numbers may change in different Buddhist traditions, and also there can be some practically we may also have some certain questions why the number is exactly 52. Can't we break the chetasikas, the single chetasikas, into two and explain as different mental factors and so forth, right? So the number, I'll follow the traditional explanation. The number is fixed according to the Theravadians, and you will see that one single mental factor can have different facets. For instance, the dosa, the anger, has multiple functions according to the Theravadians. It has multiple functions. Fear is a one aspect of dosa. Disgust is a one aspect of dosa. Anger is a one aspect of dosa. Enmity is a one aspect of dosa. Then we have despair. The upayasa is another aspect of dosa. But in a different Buddhist tradition, this despair or the upayasa, they classified it as a completely different mental factor, rather than saying it as one facet of the dosa, one functioning of dosa. They explain it as a different mental factor. So likewise, but in the end, we all experience despair, the upayasa, and we can see it as a non-self. As long as we can see it, observe it as a non-self mental factor, it doesn't greatly harm our practice, affect our practice. So these mental chetasikas are divided into three groups. We call them anya samana. Anya samana means they are miscellaneous, like they can appear in good and bad. They may associate good mental factors or bad mental factors, miscellaneous, right? Miscellaneous. Then we have akusala. These are unwholesome. Then we have sobana, not kusala. We call it beautiful. Beautiful mental factors, right? This is miscellaneous. How do we spell miscellaneous? M-I. If someone can help me for the spellings, speaker again. Miscellaneous. M-I-S. How do you? Could someone help?
I think it's M-I-S-C-E-L-L. A-L-L-A-N-E-O-S. E-N-E-N.
Okay.
I'm sorry, A-N-E-O-S, yes.
Yes, right, miscellaneous. Right, so they may, it means like these chetasikas. So we have 13 in number, unwholesome 14, beautiful 25. So these mental factors can never mix together. They can never appear together. It is not possible that they may appear. It is not possible that they may appear in a one consciousness. But these miscellaneous mental factors may associate unwholesome factors, and sometimes they may associate the wholesome ones. Very rare cases, they may appear alone. They may appear alone. So these are like the very basics of every cognition. The act of every cognition act must have at least some of them. At least some of them. But these are like accidental. These are not essential. There may be unwholesome mental factors, there may be beautiful mental factors, but not in all the acts of cognition. These miscellaneous ones are must. These miscellaneous are must. So first we'll talk about these akusala mental factors, and then we'll go into beautiful mental factors, and then we finally come into these miscellaneous ones, which are required for all the acts of cognition. Why they are called miscellaneous? Because sometimes they associate the unwholesomeness. Sometimes they associate the beautifulness of the mind. But one thing is, they can never come together. They can never associate. But these miscellaneous ones are capable of associating them. Sometimes they are capable of associating them. But this and this is never possible to happen. They will never appear together. They can never appear together. Right? Now, we'll go into these unwholesome mental factors first. We have 14 unwholesome mental factors. The first one we call is the moha. Moha. If you can, in our handout, the list will be given with the translation. For the time being, we'll just have a rough idea about them. Moha. Moha means the delusion. It hinders the mind in seeing the true nature of an object. The chitta focuses on a certain object, but if moha, this mental factor, appears together with chitta, it covers the mind from seeing the actual natures of the object. It doesn't allow the mind to take or know the object in its actual form or actual qualities. That is the functioning of moha. We call it delusion. Right? We call it delusion. So, what is this delusion? What does this delusion mean? Sometimes we may have ignorance. Another word is ignorance. Ignorance, like not knowing, unknowing something. Sometimes we may forget or we may not know the name of a particular person. This ignorance is not called the moha. Here, moha, ignorance, means not knowing the actual natures of a certain object. What are the actual natures? What are these actual natures? It's like not knowing the objects are impermanent. They bring suffering. They are non-self. Then, not knowing them, like if someone tends to think them as permanent, if someone happens to think them as pleasurable or as a self, that cognition is against the actuality. Is against the actuality. So why those misunderstandings have occurred? Why such misunderstandings have occurred? Because there was a mental factor which hindered the actual cognition of that particular object. Due to which the mind was unable to see the object in its actual form, in its actual appearance, or in its actual nature or actual quality. So that mental factor which hinders the mind or prevents the mind from taking the objects in its real form or real quality is called moha. It covers the mind from seeing the actual truth. So then we have to understand what is the realm of this ignorance. It's not just not knowing the name of a certain particular object or forgetting a particular day, exact day, is not the real ignorance that we are talking here. Such kind of ignorance means not knowing, such kind of lack of knowledge even is found in arahants, can be found in arahants. So according to the Buddhist tradition, only the Buddha doesn't have that type of not knowing, like lack of knowledge. So therefore, but the arahants we know have completely eradicated the moha. Therefore, moha means here, the moha means the mental factor which covers the mind from knowing the actual true qualities. So this is an unwholesome mental state. It's an unwholesome mental state. Then we have another four law called Ahirika, Anuttapa, and Uddacha. Ahirika, Anuttapa, and Uddacha. If you explain them briefly, Ahirika is shamelessness, moral shamelessness. Moral shamelessness. Right. Make a pain on that, any? Moral shamelessness. It means sometimes we have something called the moral shame, that we, due to which we feel shameful to do certain bad activities. Certain bad activities. So this, when the moral shamelessness in our all ignoble acts, unwholesome acts, we can find this moral shamelessness. All the acts are associated with moral shamelessness. We normally explain it like our mind stream is quite pure by birth, because it's not the rebirth consciousness is not defiled according to the Buddha's teachings. Pabassaramidam bhikkave chittang. Then if certain defiling natures appear in our mind, there is a mental state which facilitates these unwholesome states to occupy our mind, So therefore, it's also considered as an immoral quality. Anuttapa is moral fearlessness. There is also a mental factor which allows such burning defilements that would bring lots of harm to us and also to others to come into our mind. So they facilitate the unwholesome acts. Then Uddacha is restlessness. Right? Uddacha is restlessness. So these are unwholesome mental states out of the 14 unwholesome mental states. So if any focus, now we come back to the practical aspect, like consciousness is the focus. If in any focus, if a focus is associated with these mental states, if it is associated with such mental states, we call it a akusala chitta. Why do we call something a akusala chitta? So don't get confused here. We define the chetasikas first. Mental factors into miscellaneous, unwholesome or akusala, beautiful or sobana. This is the classification of chetasikas. If any chitta associates or is associated by any of these mental states, that chitta is known as an akusala chitta. It's termed as an akusala chitta. So we all know that in the consciousness, the realm of consciousness, we have four types of chittas. We have akusala chittas, kusala chittas, vipaka chittas, and kriya chittas. These are the four types of consciousness. This is the three types of mental states, mental factors. These are two things. In the previous lecture, we mentioned consciousness and mental factors are two different things. Though they appear together, mixed in a manner, which are practically inseparable. In a manner, inseparable practically. They are connected in with such closeness. But intellectually, we can understand they are two things. In act of cognition, focus is there, feeling is there. Feeling and focus are different things. Sometimes the attachment is there. Attachment and the focus are two different things. So likewise, mental factors are different elements. Consciousness, the focus, is a different element. I hope now everyone is capable to distinguish this. If we cannot distinguish what is consciousness and what are chetasikas, then we have to try again and again to understand this, because it's not possible that we go further without this, without able to distinguish this chitta and chetasikas. That is one of the basic requirements if we are going to study the Theravada Buddhist teaching. We should be able to distinguish these two. Then, at least theoretically, in the beginning. So mental factors, chetasikas, are 52. So they are divided into these groups. Consciousness is just a one element. It's just a one reality. But this one reality is divided into four groups. So the first group, why it is divided into akusala group, such a group called akusala, because if this consciousness associates any of these mental factors, not them, any of these mental factors, those consciousness are categorized as akusala. So based on the proportion of these mental, proportion means the number of these mental factors, what type of mental factors are associated, then we have 12 types of akusala chittas. The number of chittas become 12 because there is a 12 types of verities in that particular akusala chitta based on how they are, what sort of akusala chetasikas associate them. So then, like we just discussed, now there are 14 types of akusala chetasikas written here, 14. So these are the main four of these 14. Then we have some other, like lobha. Lobha is attachment towards a particular object. Attachment, we get attached to something, someone, like to a non-living thing or a living being, right? So, but for lobha to happen, there should be ignorance. Why do we get attached to someone? Because we doesn't see the exact truth in that person, the true nature of that person. We don't see the true nature of an inanimate thing. So we start to hold it, or we start to get attached towards that object. So then we sometimes have a chetasika called ditthi. Ditthi is wrong view. Now with the attachment, with the ignorance, sometimes we may come into wrong conclusions about certain particular objects. Like if we think about the consciousness, right? If we think about our life, someone may think this life is eternal, like a particular life is eternal. This life or the soul will end. This life will soul will end at the moment of death. So such kind of wrong considerations are called ditthi. So now we can see, now we can just think, like there is an act of cognition. Sometimes this cognition, the act of cognition, we find an attachment or leaning towards a particular object. We try to treasure it. We tend to grab it or consider it as ours. So that is attachment. Sometimes we may have wrong considerations that this is a self, this is something permanent, a life in the heaven is permanent. Such kind of wrong considerations are called ditthi. The wrong consideration, the focus, and the ignorance are three things. The focus is like our mind is directed, our attention is directed towards that object. That is the focus. Then the ignorance covers the true nature of the object which is focused, which has been focused at. Then the ditthi thinks about it wrongly, have a consideration against the actual reality. Considering something impermanent as permanent, considering something is which gives suffering as blissful or pleasurable. So likewise, they are different mental acts. They have different mental acts. Acts means like they happen together, but we can see they have distinct functioning. But all happens together at the same time. At that time, there is a restlessness. The mind is not very calm, not at peace. So restlessness is another mental factor. Then sometimes we have mana, conceit. Mana, conceit, comparing ourselves with others, like I am superior to this person, I have a higher knowledge than the other person, my class, caste, wealth is higher than others. Or sometimes we put ourselves like with a negative aspect, that I'm a weaker person than that person, so forth. So these kind of considerations are called mana, like comparing ourselves with others. A thing to be mentioned is, not all comparison is classified under mana. Not all comparison. For instance, Buddha mentioned that he has a knowledge more than any savaka, any of his disciples, any person in the world. So that kind of consideration, we, according to Buddhism, we call it a wise consideration. Knowing exactly what is the true, what is the position, the real position, our position in the society, in the world. Now if we go into near to a king in the ancient days, we would not keep ourselves above him. Because we know according to the social hierarchy, it's not proper. When we go to visit a monk, a pious devotee goes to visit a monk, he may not sit in the same position with a monk because he finds it not appropriate. Because the devotees think that the monk has a higher virtue than themselves. So then we know how to pay the respect, how to express our respect. Children and parents have different positions in their family relationship. So knowing the actual position of the person is not mana. Mana here means maybe someone is actually higher in the society due to his wealth, due to his skills, due to his virtue, due to the power he possesses, whatever reason it is. Knowing that in the actual sense is not mana, but if someone get intoxicated due to this superiority over others, like due to his highness, or due to having more wealth over others, or having more power over others. So if someone feels like a certain kind of a pleasure, or I would not say all pleasures are associated with mana, but like if someone is ignorant or conceit about himself, feels proud about himself or others, or looks down upon others, like consider them as like ignoble or weaker or lower to him in status. So this kind of consideration is what is called mana. In the negative aspect, we have something called hinamana, like blaming ourselves, putting ourselves in a lower position, like not knowing the actual position in the society, but with a negative aspect. So likewise, this consideration about ourselves is also is counted as an unwholesome mental state in Buddhist teachings. Then we have another group called dosa, anger. I think there's nothing much to explain about this. All of us experience this mental state, like the loba. Then we have issa, we call jealousy. Jealousy means not appreciating others' success, feeling like a sort of a discomfort when we see others are gaining success. This is called jealousy. Then we have machariya. Machariya is we call stinginess. Stinginess means not liking this. Just stinginess doesn't covers the entire range of machariya. Just one translation, one word of translation would not cover the entire range of these Pali words. Stinginess means like he doesn't like someone else to get something like he has. Like for instance, just not liking someone to get another person, one of the friends to get a good car, not be feeling uncomfortable with that is jealousy. If someone doesn't like the person, the friend, to obtain a car like he has, that is stinginess. That is machariya, I would call. Normally the word stinginess means that he is not willing to give anything to someone, but this machariya, like someone comes and uses my objects, like look into my phone or something, then we feel a little bit uncomfortable. If we feel uncomfortable that thinking that he may break it, that's a different case. Like a baby comes and takes something and we know that he is not capable to handle it properly, so that time we feel a little bit uncomfortable and we go and take it. That is a different thing, that's done with wisdom. But sometimes we have a feeling that we doesn't like, it's a very low mental state, like using our house, someone using our chairs or equipments, like, so then we sometimes feel a little bit uncomfortable with that. That is called stinginess. And also then when we extend it, so others obtaining things higher than what we have, or superior things than what we have, or similar things than like we have, that uncomfortableness, like that feeling, is called, also falls into machariya. Then kukucha is the regret. Regret over the things that we have done in the past. Mainly about the unwholesome things that we did and the opportunities that we missed to do good things. Unwholesome things we did and the opportunities we missed. Like sometimes we feel, oh, I could have meditated the last month. I just spent the last month just looking into the internet and so forth without spending much wholesome things. Maybe sadhya cannot either. Likewise, these feelings, remorse about our past acts, is called kukucha. Then the another thing to be mentioned is like, so these four, like ignorance, moral shamelessness, moral fearlessness, restlessness, these mental qualities are found if in all the akusala chit, like if any of these states are found, the remaining three is surely found, should be found. But the thing with these is, if lobha is present, any of them are present, none of these four would appear. It means, even within the realm of unwholesomeness, lobha and dosa, lobha and issa, lobha and machariya, lobha and kukucha can never come together. Like, that's why we categorize these three in one group and these four separately. They are not able to coexist. They have contrasting features with each other. Within the group, they can associate. Lobha can associate ditti, lobha can associate mana, but it's also mentioned these two cannot associate each other. That's a different case. But the entire group will never associate, this lobha group would never associate the dosa group. Right? So within that, now we all in the beginning we mentioned the unwholesomeness and the beautiful chetasikas. Unwholesome chetasikas and beautiful chetasikas can never mingle together. They can never come together. Likewise, within the unwholesome group, lobha can never appear with dosa. And ditti can never appear with dosa. They may follow each other. That is possible. Like, sometimes we may get attached to a certain particular object. Suddenly, we are watching a nice movie or a pleasant listening to a sweet sound or song. Suddenly, the electricity is cut off. Then we lose that object. Suddenly, the dosa, anger, sorrow, sadness would appear. Therefore, the dosa can easily follow lobha, but they can never associate together. They can never associate together. One time I remember a very good question was asked, can lobha change into dosa or can dosa change into lobha? Are these characteristics are interchangeable? No. Lobha is always lobha, dosa is always dosa in its characteristic. It doesn't mean that the one lobha persists throughout our entire life while we get attached to various things, or one dosa is present when we dislike something, various objects. There are different realities arising again and again, but they share the same characteristic. All the dosas share the same characteristic of disliking the object, going against the object. All the lobha within one life, or within the entire samsara, within the entire animals, human sphere, share the same characteristic of getting attached to a particular object. Their characteristics are never interchanging. But lobha triggers dosa. Dosa can trigger, really it can trigger more lobha. But, and the next thing is, their qualities are not interchangeable. At the same time, they do not associate each other. They do not associate it. But they may proceed one after one. Lobha, because of lobha, we may have dosa. That's why Buddha mentioned, Pemati jayati soko, Pemati jayati bhayam. Because of lobha, one can get sorrow, one can get fear. Fear of losing that particular person, or sorrow when we lose that particular person, whom we got attached to. So that is also one thing to mention. So these are all akusala mental states. Now we have already discussed, I think, 11, right? 4 here, 3 here, 4 here. So altogether 11 mental states. Then we have, is it 3 more? 3 more. The next two are Thina and Middha. Sloth and Topper. Right? Topper. 1P or double P? I'm not sure. Sloth and Topper. So these are laziness. This is the weakness of the mind. They appear together. Technically, we call the laziness or the weakness of the mind, weakness of the mental factors, but always they appear together. It's not a fault to know them as just laziness of the mind, which drains the energy of the mind, which doesn't let us to do activities actively or with a bright mind. We feel lethargic to do certain acts. We feel backwards. So that is the sloth and torpor. But not always. Like sometimes, due to our wisdom, we may think like, is it proper? Now we have decided to study the Dhamma. At that time, someone calls us for meditation. So we know it's not the proper time for meditation. So then we feel backwards towards that act. This is not sloth or torpor. This is not Thina Middha. Thina Middha weakens our mind. If we are backwards towards a particular object with a weakened mind, that is called Thina Middha. The mind has to get weakened. The energy is lost at that moment. That we can experience this sometimes while meditating. When the energy is gone, you completely fall into sleep. While listening to Dhamma talks, while doing certain boring things, because Dhamma talks is not like a song. It's not entertaining sometimes. Like quite deep philosophical points, sometimes discussing about our own faults. So these are not entertaining to most of us. So that's why in many cases we fall into sleep while listening to such talks. And also in meditation, unless we have had the tasted the bliss in meditation or the bliss in concentration, very easily people fall into sleep. Then the last one is vichikicha, doubt. The doubt, skeptical doubt we call. The doubting, it's better to say the skeptical doubt, because here doubt doesn't mean like sometimes we forget the name of a certain person, and sometimes we have a false memory whether he is Mr. A or Mr. B. So we sometimes doubt and ask someone else whether to confirm his name before we address him. Otherwise, it can be something insulting. So this kind of doubt is not vichikicca. It's not vichikicca. In Dhamma, we term it as patirupaka vichikicca. Even arahants can have it. Arahants can possess it. Venerable, there was an arahant, if I remember his name. Kumarakassapa. Venerable Kumarakassapa had a doubt about his ordination, whether he was a real monk or not. Even after being an arahant, he had a doubt about his ordination, because Buddha said that one has to become at least 20 years to get to become a full-fledged monk. So likewise, these are not the doubts we discuss here. This vichikicca is doubting about the rebirth, doubting about the past lives, doubting the fruitfulness of this practice, doubting the existence of nirvana, doubting the possibility of someone becoming a Buddha. So these are doubting the actual phenomena of the world. Such doubts are considered as unwholesome. Why they are unwholesome? Isn't it that someone, a wise person, should not doubt, like shouldn't have a doubt? Yes. Doubt is a very basic quality of a wise person. Like, doubting means like investigating whether it's correct or wrong, whether it's correct or wrong. So in that sense, investigating is not doubt according to the teaching, not vichikicca. It's like we are investigating, we haven't come into a conclusion. But sometimes, even after we have done the research, the mind is still in a dilemma. It's like it's unable to distinguish what is correct and what is wrong. So this level is called the doubt. Not just listen, like a beginner to the Dhamma would try to listen what the rebirth is and what are the counterfacts for rebirth. And we listen to both these facts, and then we come into a conclusion. Either we accept the rebirth or either we reject the rebirth. Sometimes we come into an agnostic position, like we are not accepting anything. That is also another position. But the doubt means sometimes we see that there is a possibility of rebirth, there is a possibility of non-rebirth, and the mind is pending in these two. That mind state which doesn't allow us to take the proper decision, which makes our mind to pend into these two extremes, these two decisions, is called the doubt. So doubting the existence of ability, the possibility of becoming a Buddha, doubting the existence of nirvana, doubting the fruitfulness of this practice, doubting that there were beings, noble beings who attained, treading upon this path, and also doubting the rebirth, the past lives, and also the causal relationship, and sometimes the karma, they all fall into this category. So these are the 40 mental states. So they are must in, like, if any of them appears, they are followed by moha, ahirika, anuttapa, and uddaccha. We call them universal unwholesomes. They are the basic requirement for these all unwholesome qualities. Without them, none of them would appear. The remaining 10 is not possible to happen in a mind if these are absent. So they, if moha appears, these three will follow. If ahirika appear, these three will follow. So likewise, they are must. Like, they always arise together. Then in the next group, lobha group, the attachment, wrong view, and conceit, they may appear, but they have to associate these mental states. But when they appear, this dosa, issa, maccariya group doesn't come. When the dosa, issa, maccariya comes, the lobha, ditti, mana doesn't appear. So they are not cannot exist coexist with each other. Sloth and torpor can associate dosa and can associate moha group as well. Like for instance, a very simple example: when we feel tired, when we see and really want to have a nap, you see a very comfortable bed, you feel lots of happiness with the laziness. Like while someone is sleeping and wants to get up in the early morning, sometimes we go back into the sleep again with a happyful mind state, like liking the laziness, liking the sleep. Sometimes we are supposed to do things, our mind is now has fallen into the drowsiness, but we have to continue it. So we really feel uncomfortable and tired. So that time, this laziness is associated with dosa. So they can associate with both lobha and dosa. The last one is doubt. They neither associate dosa, neither associate lobha. They only associate these mental states. So there is a order how they are mixed, these mental states. The point I want to emphasize is, all these 14 mental, if a consciousness, a focus, I'll come back to the consciousness story. If the focus is associated with any of these mental states, that consciousness is termed as akusala. According to the number of the mixtures of these mental states, there are 14 akusala mental states. So according to the mixture, what type of mental states are connected with others, so we have the akusala chittas are 12 in number. There are 12 types of akusala chittas. When we say akusala chitta, we are giving attention to the focus. That focus is associated with any of these 14 mental states. Any of these means with these 14 mental states. So in the chetasika group, we have 14 akusala chetasikas. If a consciousness associates them, that is an akusala consciousness, akusala chitta. So there are 12 types of akusala chittas based on what numbers, how many particular chetasikas are mixed. For instance, if only this and this, sometimes with this, is mixed, we call it lobha chittas, consciousness associated with lobha. There can be eight types of verities in these lobha chittas, eight verities. Then if this is connected with this, the dosa appears with them, there are two types of consciousness. So likewise, we have 12 akusala chittas based on the way they are mixed, these chetasikas are mixed, right? So that is the lecture I would like to give. These are the akusala chittas and akusala chetasikas. The difference we have to know. We divided the chetasikas into three groups: miscellaneous, unwholesome, and beautiful. So miscellaneous are the basic requirements of cognition, which we discuss later. Then we come to the unwholesome mental states, which defile our mind. There are 14 unwholesome chetasikas. Then we have 25 beautiful chetasikas. Beautiful chetasikas and unwholesome chetasikas can never coexist. But the miscellaneous ones may exist with unwholesome chetasikas, may exist with the beautiful chetasikas. Very rarely they can exist alone even. Then if any focus is associated with any of these akusala chetasikas, 14 akusala chetasikas, that focus is classified as akusala chitta. Akusala chitta. So when we say akusala chitta, it's not just the chitta alone. They are associated with akusala chetasikas. Actually, why a certain chitta is termed as akusala chitta? Because they associate akusala chetasikas. So therefore, before we study the akusala chitta, at least we should have a basic understanding about the akusala chetasikas. Why something is called akusala chitta? Because they associate akusala chetasikas. So what are these akusala chetasikas? They are 14 to the the way they are mixed with each other. How many, like for instance, if lobha and the first four arise together, dos citta is called lobamula citta. If dosa and these four appear together, that citta is called dosamula citta. So the way they are mixed with each other, the manner they are mixed, according to that, we have 12 types of the akusala citta. The consciousness can be explained in 12 ways. For that, if we go further, we have 8 pain at the end. Pain on. Right. 8, 2, 2. These are the 12. 8 means 8 cittas associate loba, loba dittimana and so forth. Right, 8 citta, we call it loba mula. Then we have 2 cittas with dosa mula, and we have 2 cittas with moha mula. Moha mula. One citta associate with chikicha, the other moha mula citta doesn't have any of them. They have only these 4. Right, none of these. Right, but in that citta, restlessness is very strong. This is how the akusala cittas became 12. Based on the 14 akusala cittas. So today we discuss about 12. Sorry, we first discuss about 14 akusala cetasikas. And based on these 14, we have 12 akusala cittas, right? 12 akusala cittas, right? To conclude the class, why do we call akusala citta based on these 14? Why it became 12? According to the way the akusala cetasikas are coexisting, the way they are coexisting, right? If any citta is associated with loba, ditti, mana, and the first four, they are called lobamula. There are 8 types of such cittas. Then if any citta is associated with dosa, issa, macchariya, kukkuccha, and the first four, they are dosamula cittas. There are 2 types of such cittas. If any citta is associated with vichikicca and the first four, that is a mohamula citta. And another one mohamula citta. Another mohamula citta is they only have these 4 with a strong restlessness. So these are the 2 mohamula citta. Why they are called mohamula? Because they have only moha as the root. Right? The first 8 was called dosamula. They have loba as the root. They do have moha as the root, but loba is dominant. Second one, why they are called dosamula? Because they have dosa and moha, these 2 groups. But dosa is predominant, right? So this is how we discuss about akusala cittas and akusala cetasikas. So then next week we'll proceed to like kusala vipaka kriya and so forth. Yeah, I'll conclude the lecture, opening the forum for the Q&A session.
Thank you so much, Bhante. Sadhu. So hello everyone. So as usual, if you have any questions, please can I can put it in the chat box so you can raise your hand. Okay, I have a question in the chat box.
Okay.
So the question is, Bhante, what is the Sinhala word for focus? Is it ekagrata?
No, Sinhala word, okay, that is, how do you call it? Focus, avadhanaya. Okay, anyway, only the Sinhala speakers, avadhanaya we call it. Ekagata is one-pointedness. Now, the difference between citta and ekagata, that is also very important to know. Citta is the focus toward a particular object. With the citta, for instance, if we take these 3 objects, I hope you can see on the table. If I focus on this, I ignore all the others and give my attention toward this object. If I close my eyes and focus on this, I ignore the others. So the focus is collecting one object out of the lot. That is focus. That is the function of consciousness. Then this particular object, there are various ways that this particular object can be known. We can consider it as a purple thing. We can consider it as something used to erase the whiteboard. We can consider it something plastic with a sponge. So likewise, we can have look into this in various aspects. A lot of possibilities. The way the object can be taken. So out of these all possibilities, ekagata places the conscious in one aspect of the object. In one aspect of the object. One facet, I would call. And one facet in the way it can be taken. So when we come into this difference of consciousness and ekagata, we have to take the object as a one thing. This object is... If we focus on the color of the object, that is a different case. If we take this duster, this is a one object. And that can be taken, that can be known with different attentions. Different attention means different ways, like various ways. So one-pointedness focuses on the one of the facets of this object. Facet means not the sides. The ways it can be taken. We can consider this as a duster. We can consider this as a plastic thing. We can consider this as something to like a purple thing. So likewise, we focus on one aspect of the object. So ekagata places. Otherwise, if we try to take all the aspects of the object at once, the mind is unable to have a proper cognition. The mind is unable to have a proper cognition. So that's why consciousness separates the one object from the lot, and ekagata places the conscious in one of the aspects out of the many, that particular object can be taken. Then someone can ask the question, can't we extend, like can't we join certain aspects, like a purple duster that can be used to erase the whiteboard made by this company and so forth. Can't we make the sentence longer and longer? In that regard, I would say maybe there can be to a certain extent. There can be a certain extent. I don't deny that possibility, but to a certain extent. Not like countless amount. So therefore, one-pointedness focuses on one facet or the one aspect the object can be taken. Consciousness focuses on that particular object. So in that case, we should know the object and the ways the object can be taken. So these are two different things, but they are connected to the object itself.
Okay, thank you so much, Pandey. So, I have a question. Pandey.
Yes, yes.
So, do you have any insights on why Deity is so important that it is taken as one of the three factors to classify the Lobha Moolachikas into eight?
Yeah, my personal idea, I have not seen any reason why this is classified so. My personal idea is the ditti plays a huge role in our practice. We have Sakkaya ditti, we have 62 types of dittis in Brahmajala Sutta, we have three fixed views. I think that was the main reason, one of the main reasons why ditti was taken as to classify the consciousness. I think you are now we have Lobha, Ditti and Mana as three basic of this group. I think everyone can see, right? And also the ones who have studied Abhidhamma, sorry for that, because if I have distributed the handout, it would be very easy for others to follow. So these eight Lobha Moolachittas if I erase them as the Dr. Ryan is asking, these eight Lobha Moolachittas they all associate the Lobha right, all associate the Lobha. One is Somanasa, it's a pleasant feeling, Somanasa Sahagata. Ditti associate with ditti sampayutta, then asankharika. I'll write in shortened form. Then we have somanassa, ditti sampayutta, sasankharika. Then someone asks, somanassa without ditti. Ditti vipayutta, asankharika. Then we have somanassa, ditti vipayutta, sasankharika. Then the same four is repeated, 6, 7, 8. Instead of somanassa, we have upekkha. But the same four is repeated, like upekkha sahagata, ditti sampayutta, asankarika, sampayutta, sasankarika. Then upekkha sahagata, ditti vipayutta, asankarika, sasankarika. The same is repeated here, right? Example, ditti with wrong view, asankarika is prompt, sasankarika. I'll explain them in the next lecture, what is asankarika and sasankarika. Then we have ditti vipayutta, asankarika and sasankarika. So to next week I'll explaining what is this promptness and promptedness and all this. So as I think another question that can be raised is, now according to them, ditti has taken a main position. All chittas are associated with lobha, and a chitta is classified as connected with ditti, not connected with ditti. Connected with ditti, not connected with ditti. Connected with ditti, not connected with ditti. But mana is not given that position. Right? So I think the thing was, because the main role ditti plays in our sasana. So because one of my friends asked the question, why can't we say somanasa sahagata mana sampayutta asankarika, mana sampayutta sasankarika, mana vipayutta asankarika, mana vipayutta sasankarika? My personal idea is ditti plays a huge role in our practice over mana, because to become a sotapanna, what we have to eradicate is the ditti, not the mana. Mana will be lessened, but mana will remain till our arahanthood because of its grossness, because of the of its influence to our rebirth, especially in the hell, especially in the woeful realms, and also the attention Buddha has given, and also overcoming ditti is the biggest challenge for a vipassana meditator in the first stage. So ditti and vichikicca are the greatest obstacles to overcome in the practice of vipassana. That's why we have an entire one phase for ditti visuddhi, and the second phase entirely for ditti and vichikicca. These are the most difficult mental factors to deal with in a vipassana meditation. So based on these reasons, I think ditti is given a very significant position, and consciousness is also divided based on ditti when it comes to lobha moha cittas.
Thank you, Pandey. Okay, please go ahead, Sajale Punya.
Morning, Bani. I have two questions.
Okay.
In the Dhammasangani, when we say in Dhammasangani Arthagatha, it mentions the Jeta is pure. Mm-hmm. The Jeta itself is pure. It's because of mixed with other jealousy. So, in that particular case, which aspect
Chitta is pure and it get defiled because of mental states, right? Akusala mental states. So this statement can be explained in two ways. I think there is a very famous teaching given by the Buddha. As I think anyone who has read the Dhamma to a certain extent would know this statement. The Buddha mentioned, Pabassara midam bhikkave chittang tanchaku agantukehi upakkilesehi upakkilikta. So the statement, the meaning of the statement is, monks, the consciousness is pure. Pabassara midam bhikkave chittang. Pabassara midam bhikkave chittang. Bhikkave chittam. Panchako agantukehi upakkilesehi upakkilikta. So I'll just focus on this aspect. pabassara midam bhikkave citta monks, this consciousness is pure, it's bright, we can call, undefiled. Right? So these are the meanings. Pabassara means it's very bright, undefiled, it's pure. It doesn't mean that the consciousness has a is illuminating, like something with the physical photons. It's not illuminating like a light. It's undefiled. It's lightness, brightness. Brightness actually is explained because it's undefiled. Then it becomes defiled by visiting, like incoming defilements. What are these incoming defilements? The 14 mental states that we discussed. There are 14 mental states, akusala chetasikas. When they appear in the mind gets defiled. Then a question may come, what sort of a mind Buddha was talking? Because we mentioned there is no one consciousness. Consciousness is a stream. One arises, passes away, another follows. So likewise, it happens in a generation. So what is the aspect of this purity Buddha was talking in consciousness? So there are two ways to explain this. One is the Patisandhi Chitta and Bhavanga. Our first Chitta in a life is always pure. Pure means it's not associated with defilements. It's not associated with any of these 14 mental states. In sutras, we find defilements, akusala, papa, all are referring to these 14. When we say defilements, the states which defile the mind, these are the 14 according to Theravadians. These 14 act in various manners. So if you ask how many defilements, we say only 10 defilements, but they are taken from these 14. So these are the exhaustive classification. Of defilements, akusala. So the Patisandhi Chitta, the first Chitta in any life, Bhavanga Chitta, the Chitta which follows while we are sleeping and while we in between two mental stream, Chitta Vithis, like the consciousness, we call them, how do you call them, like Chitta Vithi, like mental streams, like mental, like. The consciousness appears in a sequence, and then we go into another object. We go to another object. When we move from object to object, there are buffers like chittas appear. So those chittas are called bhavanga chitta. Even while we sleep, this bhavanga chitta is identical. Identical means not the same, but same in its characteristics. Like they have the similar same number of mental states. They have a similar object. So for they are identical. So we call them they are similar. So these Patisandhi and Bhavanga Chitta of any being is not defiled. Even someone is born in the woeful realms due to Akusala Kamma. Having done Akusala Kamma, we are born as an animal. We are born in the hell. We are born as a Peta. So in that life, there's going to be a lot of Akusala during that life. But the first Chitta is a resultant. First Chitta is not Akusala Chitta, it's a resultant. Of an animal, it's a resultant of the past akusala. And while they are sleeping, they still get a resultant consciousness, which doesn't have any of the akusala chetasikas that we discussed today. These akusala chetasikas do not appear in vipaka chittas, resultant consciousness. These are the resultant consciousness, right? Some consciousness appear because of akusala and kusala. So therefore, each and every being, the Patisandhi Chitta, Bhavanga Chitta, is not defiled by any of these 14. So what happens? So for instance, the Bhavanga Chitta appears one after another. Then in the mental stream, at one point, we get akusala. We get akusala chitta. So here, what the Buddha has taken is, we have taken this as one thing, one chitta. It was pure in the early, we have taken it as one conscious stream, one stream. In that stream, there was a pure state, in which the akusala was not, mind was not mixed with akusala, but at a later stage we get akusala chetasikas, akusala chittas. So the mind is said to be coming from purity to impurity. Purity to impurity. Why? Because these are the same chittas. This chitta is appearing, arising and passing. Focus is arising and passing away. In this level, these focuses are not mixed with akusala chetasikas. But at this level, they are mixed with any of these 14 akusala chetasikas. So the mind became impure. That is the first aspect of explaining, first way of explaining how the pure mind become defiled. The second aspect is, now we take chitta plus chetasika, one mental cluster. We also mentioned chitta and chetasika are inseparable in practical life. They always arise together. If you remember, we divided this explanation. Like in the beginning, we should, or the very basic is focus. There should be a focus towards the object. Then, based with that focus, we have sometimes attachment. We have wrong view, focus, wrong view, and so forth, some mental states. So these are chetasikas. This is chitta. Right? So the next explanation is the chitta, the focus, is neither beautiful nor unwholesome. It's just a mere focus. But when it is connected with unwholesome states, this chitta is also considered as defiled. Because of the defilements, they are connected with, focus is connected with unwholesome states, so we consider this chitta is defiled. In case, with this focus, instead of akusala chetasikas, if beautiful chetasikas, like saddha, sati, hiri, ottappa, aloba, adosa, that mindfulness, compassion, loving kindness, wisdom, such beautiful mental states appear with them. In that sense, we call this focus as a wholesome citta, a pure, purified citta, we call it. So likewise, then in this aspect, focus itself is undefiled. Is undefiled. Then it becomes defiled or purified because of the association with unwholesome and beautiful chetasikas. Final thing to mention. So these are the two aspects. The final thing to mention is, Buddha mentions the mind become defiled by association of akusala chetasikas. Defiled. Right? So it become, it in the beginning it is undefiled. Right? So it's better not to use the word pure. I'll just erase it. Sorry for that. I'll just use bright and undefiled. It's undefiled in the beginning. Because of the association with unwholesome states, it became defiled. Right? Undefiled consciousness became defiled with association with akusala chetasikas. But in case if associate with beautiful chetasikas, what become, it becomes purified. Purified. So in the beginning state, chitta is, we have to mention, it's neither purified, neither defiled. That's how we mention normally. Chitta is neither purified, neither defiled. That's why my word, using wording was not very, very nice in the beginning. It's better not to use the word pure. It's the word we have to use is undefiled. Undefiled means not mixed with akusala. It doesn't mean it's purified. Purification of defilement. Defilement or purification happens when they are connected with akusala chetasikas and when they are connected with beautiful chetasikas. So there are two aspects. First thing is to consider the patisandhi and bhavanga chitta as undefiled. They are undefiled. The second aspect is you take a mental cluster. Inside every mental cluster, we have a focus. That focus is neither defiled nor purified. So when it is connected with akusala, it becomes defiled. When it is connected with beautiful chetasika, it becomes purified.
Okay, thank you. thank you, Pante. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Hi, Sally. I understand that you said you had two questions, but maybe you should hold on to the other question because we have a lot of other people here, so we can give other people another chance.
Right.
Okay, so go ahead, Robin.
Okay, Dr. Ryan, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah.
Okay, then. Hello, Bante. Good morning.
Hello, good morning.
So, my question is, Bante mentioned at first about the moha.
Yes.
So, the moha cover our seeing, so we cannot see the true nature of the things, Bante.
Mm-hmm.
So, it means that we cannot see the anicca dukkha nature, right, Bante?
Right, yes.
And so, what I'm confused is, like, it seems that what Bante mentioned is the moha in them. The manifestation state, so it has appeared. How about the moment in the kusala citta? In the kusala citta, we also cannot see the anicca dukkha anatta, or we cannot see that in the ultimate sense. Bante. So, how is it, Bante?
Yeah, it's a very important question because I mentioned moha is not allowing the consciousness to see the impermanent suffering and non-selfness of an object. So then the question comes, even in the kusala chittas, we are not always seeing the impermanent suffering and non-selfness. Like for instance,
yes,
when we give dana, when we contemplate the attributes of the Buddha, when we practice metta, we don't see the impermanent suffering and non-selfness in the object. So actually the sphere of moha is the function of moha has been explained in two ways. When we talk with relation to vipassana meditation, we would say normally moha is the ignorance about the impermanent suffering and non-self, not seeing the noble truths as they are. So how the moha is explained in Dhammasangani, dukkhe anjana, dukkha samudaya anjana, not knowing the noble truth of suffering, not knowing the noble truth of origin of suffering, not knowing the noble truth of cessation of suffering, not knowing the noble truth that about the path which leads to the cessation of suffering. This is how the moha has been explained. But the very basic level of explanation of moha, as you asked, how do we generalize moha in all, each and every citta? How do you explain it? Moha is the mental state. Moha is the mental factor which enables the citta to take the object, which makes the citta unable. That's how we should use it. Which makes the citta unable, which prevents the citta from taking the object in a manner which it doesn't get attached, doesn't start to see the truth. It means when the moha is present, if we say it in a simple term, if the moha is present, either the mind gets attached to the object, either the mind starts to dislike the object, either the mind starts to doubt the object, and so forth. So when we doesn't like the object, when we attach to the object, it means we have not comprehensively seen the quality of the object. Because for that we have to have a universal like a explanation about the citta, like each and every object doesn't need to be get attached, should not get attached by the citta. Object doesn't have the intrinsic quality of getting attached, to be attached. The object doesn't have the intrinsic quality to get attached. It doesn't deserve the attachment. It doesn't deserve the dosa. It doesn't deserve to be doubted in the mentioned in the vichikicca level. So likewise, so the object, so according to Buddhist teachings, your question was a very nice one, like we have to explain the objects does not deserve these kind of mental emotions. So if these mental emotions appear, what does it mean? The mind was unable to get the object, the mind was not able, and it was unable to see the object in a manner not getting attached, not disliking or not doubting or not getting restless. So moha, it doesn't mean like, otherwise if we just, as you said, if we just confine the moha, not seeing the impermanent suffering and non-self, not seeing the Four Noble Truths, the question may easily come up. How about the kusalas that we do while we give dana, while we do, metta and so forth? To avoid this, we have to come into a very basic level of conscious explanation about the moha. That is, for that we have to mention, every object, none of the objects have the characteristics to get attached, to consider this something to get attached, not to dislike and not to also to not to doubt or feel restless about. This same approach has to be made with saddha, for an instant. We normally say saddha is believing the true attributes of Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, the validity of path, the previous life, the future lives, and so forth. These are the fields of saddha. So then a question comes, while we are doing vipassana, while we are seeing the impermanent suffering of a non-self of an object, we still have saddha. When we just suddenly see a living being drowning in the water, we rescue it. It's done with a kusala chitta, it has saddha. Even this can be done by a person who has no faith in Buddhist teachings, who has no belief in rebirth. But still, according to Theravadian, there is saddha in that chitta. So what is the basic explanation of saddha? Saddha is the mental state which purifies the mind from defilements, which put the defilements down and facilitates that purity of the mind, which facilitates arising of loving kindness, arising of wisdom, arising of non-attachment and so forth. So therefore, when we come into saddha, we explain it as the mental state which purifies the mind. So likewise, moha also has to be explained in that very basic level. This will be applied to when we come in to explain the chetasikas. We have to explain it in a such a basic level, but in the teachings we find it in a particular level. But when we want to generalize these chetasikas, we have to explain it in very detail. So in a kusala chitta there is no moha. Why is that? Kusala chitta doesn't have lobha, doesn't have dosa. Kusala chitta doesn't have the doubt. It means the chitta has taken the object in a manner in which it doesn't get attached, it doesn't dislike, it doesn't get doubted. So therefore, moha is not present in kusala chittas. I hope you had the idea about it. Like, if I know it's maybe I was unable to present it nicely. How do you feel? Do you have any question? Further questions on this, Robin?
Yes, but yeah. Actually, like what I want, is it okay?
Yeah, sure.
So, like, as far as I know, the moha is also prevent us to see things in the ultimate sense. Is it correct, Bante? Like,
that
we
is...
just see the concept because of the moha.
No. Concept, it's not like that. According to Theravadians, just seeing the concept is not moha. For instance, when we practice metta, we have a conceptual idea. So therefore, moha is not seeing the reality. That's why I mentioned in Dhammasangan, if you see the explanation of moha, you find it in an extreme explanation, like not knowing the Four Noble Truths is moha. In the level of anusaya, it is okay, it's correct. But when the consciousness appears, like practicing metta, there is no understanding about Four Noble Truths. Even a non-Buddhist can have metta jhana. So that's why I mentioned the basic characteristic of moha is, moha doesn't let the mind to take a certain object in a manner. What is that manner? When you take the object in a certain manner, the mind doesn't get attached to the object, doesn't dislike the object, doesn't doubt the object. So this is the proper cognition. What is the proper cognition? Not attaching, not disliking, not doubting, not being restless. So moha doesn't facilitate this cognition, this type of cognition. Because of the covering done by moha, when the object is known, either the chitta starts to attach to the object get attached to the object, starts to dislike the object, start to doubt the object, or start to get restless about the object. So this covering is the basic functioning of moha. Basic functioning of moha. For instance, we think about the Buddha. We have the concept of Buddha. We consider him as a person. But in a noble sense, in terms of noble truths, he's constituted with elements which are suffering. His rupa belongs to the truth of suffering. And only his palachitta is out of the four noble truths. So likewise, even now, knowing Buddha as an enlightened person is a conceptual idea. We have the concept in our mind at that time. So that, but still we pay respect to him, we consider him very, very, we esteem him, we keep him in a high position, and we go refuge under him. So at that time, there is a conceptual idea in the mind, but it is not considered moha. Why is that? If moha is present, there should be either lobha, dosa, doubt, or restlessness. So what does it mean? When the moha is present, moha doesn't allow the mind to take the object in a proper manner. What is that proper manner? Not to get attached, not to dislike, not to get restless, or not to doubt. So that is the very basic function of moha. Whether it's a concept or not, whether it's a reality or not, it doesn't affect. It doesn't matter. It doesn't mean that concept. When we take an object, conceptual object, moha should be there. It doesn't mean like that.
Okay, thank you, Pate. Saru, saru, saru. I see the time is
yes.
up, but we still have one more hand and
okay.
Three more questions. So what do you think, Pate?
Then how about just the hand? Then we leave the questions to the next week. It'll be in the chat box.
I'll
check them and decide whether to answer the next week or in a further. Because there are some few more questions that were raised, which will be answered in future lectures. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So please go ahead, Mr. Ananda.
Thank you, Bhante. Actually, it's just a simple one. First, when you said focus, that is the manasikara in Pali. Is that the right word, Bhante?
Focus. No. Focus is manasikara means, according to the Theravada aspect, manasikara makes the mind to be involved in the act of cognition. Chitta arises and passes away. Another new chitta arises. Another new chitta arises right after. So it's a mental cognition. So in that mental cognition, there is an urge to take the object. There is an urge of this urge for this cognition. Urge means there is a mental quality which led the cognition to happen, taking an object. That is called manasikara. Here what I mean is, focus means, now there are plenty of objects in the reality, in the environment, in the world. At one time we focus at one. So this is called delimiting the object. Delimiting means we are focusing at one object, ignoring all the others. So this is the very basic act in cognition, which we term as the vijnana. The visesa janana is called vijnana. Visesa means ignoring all the other, and having a janana means knowing the object. So that's why I term this as focus. It's not the manasikara. I'm talking about the vijnana aspect. Vijnana, how do we divide? Visesa janana. Visesa means in Pali, we say there are a lot of pens. I would call the blue pen. Blue is a visesa. Blue is viseshana in Sinhalese. Viseshana. Why? What is the function of this blue? Instead of thinking about all the pens, we just focus on the blue pens. So the function of viseshana pada, viseshana is to ignore all the other, avoid all the others, and just let the mind to focus on one particular group of objects. That is called the function of visesa or viseshana. So in consciousness also, visesa janana means cognition can happen towards any object, but ignore all the others and focus on one.
Okay, Mante. And there's another one I don't know if you have time. Just
yeah, okay,
one.
Just quick, yeah.
When you were mentioning about the Sadda,
right.
Sadda is the limiting factor that energizes the Sovana Kajasika, I think, if I understood correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So, is it the same meaning when it comes to Sati, I mean, Pancha Indriya, Sadda Indriya and Sadda Bala? Is it the same thing, Mante, or is it something to do with the Dhamma and the Buddha and, you know, that kind of unshaken mind?
Yeah.
I don't know that.
Right. It's also a very important one. Like we say, explain Sadda as the mental state which purifies the mind, which puts down the defilements and facilitates the other wholesome factors to arise. For example, I'll come with that and come into your question. Like someone who doesn't believe in karma sees an animal suffering. And he just wants to save him. He wants to save it or to support it or to give some food to it. So at that time, what happens? The mind becomes pure. Why do we say it became pure? It could avoid the self-concern. Otherwise, the person would have used that time for his own benefit without considering about the animal. So there is a lot of self-concern, selfishness. I would not call it selfishness if someone doesn't help. Like there was a lot of concern. Maybe there was concern about other things even, about some other good fact. But suddenly what happens, the Saddha came in and it purified the mind and it facilitated the arising of compassion. So here Saddha doesn't mean the faith towards Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. It's just the purification, the nature which purifies the mind, facilitating loving kindness, compassion, wisdom, all these mental states to come up. So that's why Saddha is the very basic quality of beautifulness in the consciousness. That's why Saddha has been explained in the beginning. Then when you come to the spiritual aspect, spiritual growth, in the 37 aspects of Bodhipakkhya Dhammas, we have Indriya and Bala. Indriya and Bala are necessary for our attainment. Then in one Sutta Buddha mentioned, Indriya can be Bala and Bala can be Indriya. These are completely different aspects. Sometimes some would explain like Indriya becomes Bala, Bala becomes Bojjhanga, Bojjhanga becomes Magganga. But normally in these days there is a common understanding like that. I just personally think Indriya, Bala, Bojjhanga are completely different techniques that the Buddha has mentioned. If we are able to do the Bodhipakkhya lessons in future, we'll be discussing them on detail, especially in the Sinhalese one. And then when we come into the spiritual aspect, Saddha mainly refers to the faith towards the Buddha. Bala means unshaking faith towards the Buddha. So Saddhindriya means the faith which drags you to in the practice, like which gives you a power to go forward in the practice. Bala aspect is unshaking aspect. Indriya can be explained in few ways. Bala can be explained in few ways. It's unshaking. It destroys the doubt. There are few functions of this. So when it comes to the spiritual aspect in Buddhist teachings, especially with regard to Vipassana and so forth, Saddha is confined mainly to Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha and so forth. Because when you have strong faith in Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, strong faith in Kamma, strong faith in the practice, that is time we exert effort. When we exert effort again and again, we get the constant mindfulness. When we have constant mindfulness, we develop a very strong concentration. When the concentration is there, we get the wisdom. So they are linked with each other. So as you said, when it comes to spiritual aspect, we are talking about Saddha in that level, but not in the very basic level that we discussed. But this very basic level of Saddha has been discussed in the Udayavaya Jnana, in the Visuddhi Magga. At that time, when we are focusing on Anicca, Dukkha and Anatta, there is a strong purified quality in the mind, which is called Adimokkha. So it is explained in the tradition, this Adimokkha is the faith, the Saddha. But that faith is not the faith towards Buddha, Dhamma or Sangha. This faith is just the purification of the mind. So at that level in Vipassana, mind is very purified, highly purified. So there is no defilements at all. Sometimes the yogis think that they have attained the Maggapala. So therefore, Saddha has two aspects. The Pasada Saddha the purifying, the nature which purifies the mind, and the saddha in the spiritual aspect, believing Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, Kamma, rebirth, and so forth. So when it comes to saddha bala and saddha indriya, we are talking this second aspect, not the very basic aspect.
So Bande, same thing. So when you attain sotapanna, and they are also get all about saddha. So that is the same, the spiritual saddha.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, Bande, thank you so much.
So I think the time has passed, and for the questions that were put in the chat box, I'll read them and decide when to answer them in the further lectures. So thank you for joining, and wish this merit would help to sustain the Buddha's teaching for a longer period. Buddha sasanam chirantitthatu, Buddha sasanam chirantitthatu, Buddha sasanam chirantitthatu, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.